The following program is a presentation of Short Track America.
Gentlemen, start your engine!
Back to another edition of ASA Fastlane. That's Wednesday, so it's ASA Fastlane. It's always ASA Fastlane on Wednesday. How about that, Terry Wall?
I agree with you, Jack. ASA Fastlane will be Wednesdays forever now. Me and you might not be doing the show forever, but it'll be on forever.
ASA Fastlane, yeah. So tonight, we've been interviewing a lot of drivers, and a few weeks ago we talked to Matt Prier, the All-American media guy. I mean, this guy does it all, and we're always bragging about him, but I sincerely mean it. He does do, I'm just amazed at how good of a job he does. But we talked to him, and we've had some really in-depth interviews. Today, we're going to go to another official of the series and talk with Bert Thomas, who has a long history of being involved in motorsports, and we'll get a little bit about his background, Terry. And then we're going to check out Travis Dassault is leading the Challenge Series by 50 points.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the Challenge Series is no slouch. There's some really good cars and drivers in that Challenge Series. Peter Cozzolino, who's one of the old-timers, and also Eddie Hoffman Jr. is also in that series, and he's no slouch. He's won several races, and so if he's leading the points by 50, he's doing something right.
Yeah, maybe we'll find out a little about Travis Dassault, another guy from West, race car driver from Wisconsin, I believe, and we'll talk to him. But I think first let's go to Bert Thomas, who is an official with the series. He's in the technical area, I believe, and we'll pick his brain a bit. So,
all right.
Hang on there just a second. We'll hook him up. Okay. I'm going to pause this now. As promised, now we have one of the officials with the ASA Late Model Series, Bert Thomas.
Jack, how you doing? Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, we're doing pretty good. And, Terry, I don't know if you know Bert. Bert used to back in the days when you were working with B.J. McLeod, Bert was over at DeSoto Speedway in Bradenton, Florida, doing some stuff over there, a race director, flagman, and all kinds of stuff. Isn't that right, Bert?
Race car driver, ticket taker, clean track up after the races, everything, yep.
Yeah.
And that's why Bert got paid the big bucks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Allowed to retire early.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Bert over at DeSoto, and when BJ first got started, I think I met Bert in the tower one time, and we were running the baby late models. Do you remember that, Bert?
Oh, sure did. He let me drive the prototype, and just like that, he said, remember, this is the only one in the world.
Yeah.
And we had a little exhibition race there, and the deal was the insurance didn't cover BJ, but we had our own liability insurance. And Bert, I said I wanted to mention that the kid was 13 year old, and Bert asked me, well, where's he running? And I says, he's running first.
There you go. So since then, Bert retired and moved up to the mountains and then came out of retirement, I guess, and is now working with the ASA Late Model Series. That's the short version. How's it going, Bert?
Going well. Actually, I moved up here to be a little closer to it, and then I talked Ron and Sandy into doing more Southern races, so go figure.
Yeah, and we had Matt Prier, the media director and announcer for the series, on our Real Racing USA show last night. And I asked him at one point, Bert, what was the most surprising thing to him about the series thus far this year? And he said the number of Southern drivers, how much it's grown in the South.
Oh, I knew they were there. And you know, it took a little talking and quite a commitment on Ron and Sandy Varney's part to run so many that far away from their home. But, you know, it's proven to be workable, obviously.
Yeah, and there's more coming, too. I mean, I had probably just in the last week, I've had four or five of the younger drivers, dads or the drivers, tell me that next year that's where they're going.
Well, we've already got this year 52 teams registered in the Southern Division alone.
Yeah.
And how many have you gotten? What's the highest count that you've gotten to one particular race, Bert?
I believe 43 has been the top count. 42, 43, somewhere in there. They've all been 40-ish.
Yeah. And
right.
One thing that's we didn't get into too much last night, but it came out that Jason Boyd is looking to drive at New Smyrna in the ASA late model race there on June 23rd.
Yeah, he's always a good competitor, that's for sure.
No doubt. Yeah, there was a couple of jokes made by some of the other hosts on the show that they better get the tech officials extra ready. that was all in fun.
We've already got a reputation.
Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Boy, Jason's dad, build the crate motors, does he?
You know, I don't even get into that end of it.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I'm obsessed with the motors at all, but I believe you're right.
Is that right?
I think he does.
Yeah.
I'm not sensitive, though, because that's not my little area of expertise, and I let the expert take care of that part.
But I tell you, that is a good driver to come bring to the series. He is a very good race car driver.
Well, you know, when you make everything equal, it comes down to two things, the setup and the driver.
That's right.
So it doesn't matter if they're turning 14-second laps or 15-second laps, 16-second laps. As long as they're equal, you still have good racing, and that's the bottom line.
So what do you do with the series? What are your duties?
My main responsibility is spottersville. I'm the go-between the race director and the spotters up there. I'm the messenger that they always want to shoot. You know, when Ron says, "Up, that one goes to the back," I'm the one that has to tell them and get them there.
Yeah.
Other than that, I also do tech, you know, the templates, the referee, occasionally the scales, that type of thing, and tire impound. You know, we all kind of do a little bit of everything. I've actually done some of the motor tech, but there's guys a little better qualified to do that than I, and I'm in the learning stages of that.
Now, of course, I haven't seen, Terry or I, either one, have not seen any of the Northern Division races. What, you've been to a few.
Yeah, I did a couple last year, but without the schedule in front of me, I couldn't even tell you which ones I did. But I've got July 28th, Rockford, Illinois. I'll be doing that one. And then we've got a couple that we've mixed. You know, you mix the north and the south, and that's September at I-70 out by Kansas City. And then again at Nashville at the beginning of November, a three-day event. Those will be a mix with the north and the south and some of the challenge guys.
What is the biggest difference, like, between a southern, like, you know, I've been to two of the Southern Division races, so I kind of got a feel for how it goes and what to expect. How is it different when the Challenge Series takes to the track?
Generally, and not always, but generally, Ron compares it to the Busch and the Cup. Our North and South are our Busch 2 Series, and the Challenge Series is the Cup Series. Generally, you've got a little older drivers, a little more experience. Of course, the payoff. Quite a bit bigger. Generally, that's a $10,000 to win race. To draw, and I hate to say a better class, but you do draw a little more experienced class. The North and South, you know, pretty much a driver development series, really. I mean, you know, we've got some really young kids in there. And I think that's probably why we have problems getting by the first five laps without snarling up a few of them.
Yeah. Hey, Terry, what do you think of that? The challenge... The challenge division.
Is younger drivers.
The what?
And I know with all the shows that we've done so far, Jack, we've had some of the young drivers on our show, and we keep commenting they're more intelligent, they're more polite. I haven't found one to be overconfident, but like Bert said, and when they pay $10,000 to win, and what? How many laps they usually run on those, Bert?
Well, those are 200 laps.
200 lap shows. That's still a good payout for 200 laps.
Let me put that into perspective. The Hooters Pro Cup has been around for 10 years, 11 years perhaps, as the Pro Cup goes. And that's what they were running 250 laps until a couple years ago. They went to they run now 200 laps for $10,000. So
right.
The payouts are the same. I mean, I don't know about back through the field how that all works, but it's a lot more cost effective for a race team to go ASA racing, for instance, I believe, than it would be in the Hooters Pro Cup.
Well, look what they're paying for those unlimited late model engines compared. You could probably buy 8 or 9 of these crate engines for that same money.
Exactly.
And you're not going to go through 8 or 9. Rarely do we have an engine go away.
Yeah.
And they're pretty much like an anvil. They're bulletproof if you take care of them and do them what you're supposed to do to them.
But, well, and also, Bert, you can buy 3 or 4 engines and still be under the cost of one super late model engine.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the bottom line in a lot of it. I mean, you do see them roll in their $500,000 NASCAR rigs, and that's all well and good, but you know, I think the appeal is the cost of every week racing is not near as much as it is when you have the unlimited.
Yeah, yesterday Matt called that the intimidation factor.
He says
somebody comes in with a bigger hauler. He says that's one of the few advantages maybe you could get, because otherwise the motors and everything's pretty equal. So,
now, if you think back a couple of years, I remember over at New Smyrna, I believe it was, Matt Martin rolled in with a NASCAR hauler and rolled out 2 Bandoleros. So there you
was that Larry McReynolds' boy?
I think we saw that recently at a track in Georgia, too.
Yep. And we've actually had guys show up with, just open trailer for some of our ASA races. So it just goes to show it can span the whole financial gamut as far as who can afford it. If you can afford to race on every Saturday night, you can afford to race ASA. You really can.
Bert,
we haven't had that in a long time, Bert. I was back in the day. When ASA, Mark Martin, Rusty Wallace, and all them, they still had high-dollar motors back then. And now, like you said, if you can race Saturday night racing, and you can race ASA, but the traveling is the only difference. And with the gas prices the way they are, it's just the only drawback.
Well, and I flew out to, I guess it was San Antonio, and I got on a flight in Charlotte, and here comes Chris Fontaine's crew, you know, all dressed out and ready to go, because when they hit the airport, they had to go right to the track. But there's an example. You know, you can do it low buck, or you can fly your crew out, fly them back, or make them drive, you know. It just depends on what your budget will work out to. But you can do it on a shoestring, except, again, for the travel. That does get expensive.
Yeah, and there's probably an advantage to those. There probably would be an advantage, I'm guessing, to those folks who maybe can pay a little more for some higher dollar consulting on setups and stuff like that. That comes talking with Wayne Anderson, not about the ASA, but talking to him about just racing in general. That was one of the things he pointed out with the differences between Cup, Busch, Craftsman Truck, and super late model racing. You know what I mean? He was going with the setup deal where, you know, people have more technology, more knowledge. They cost more.
Well, look at David Wilson, for instance. He's got Wayne's dad, Dickie Anderson, and Junior Purcell, you know, on his consulting team. So, I mean,
yeah.
If you want to make it work, you hire the people who know how to do it.
Yeah, buddy.
Exactly right. Exactly.
Hey, Terry, you mentioned a little bit ago about these young kids, you know, being polite and everything. Well,
right.
They understand the route to get to where they want to be. They've been well coached. They understand PR. They understand.
Right.
Yeah. You know, they know how they're supposed to act in order to make that progressive step up and go to the next one, and finally get where they want to get to.
It's completely true. This young thing, like, you know, and not to harp on that subject, but, you know, in the South 10 years ago, B.J. McLeod, and there was a couple other ones around the country. There were some youngsters up in Virginia of the same age that made a kind of a hit like that. John Wood is one that comes to mind. But nowadays, having 14-year-old racers out there running and winning races is not uncommon at all.
No, it's not. And you know what I kind of attribute that to? All these video games. They get that good eye-hand coordination.
Yeah.
You've got to have that in any sport. And racing certainly is a demanding, physically demanding sport.
Back in the day when I was doing PR for B.J. McLeod, I started PRing for him when he was 13 years old. I actually got him in an ASA race at 13 years old. And then they made a rule that you couldn't run ASA till you're 16. So I sort of incorporated A new rule.
What is the age now, Bert?
It's 14, I believe.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, is it 14?
Yeah. I think I think Ron, the way Ron has got it structured, I believe they can run at 14. Because I talked to a 13-year-old Saturday night, Seth Greco, I believe that was the one I was talking to. I think it was Seth that said he'll be 14 next year, and they're going to the ASA. I mean, maybe it wasn't him, but it was a 13-year-old who said they were going racing ASA next year. And they'd be 14.
You know, Terry, I've still got BJ was handing out those little postcards that he had years ago.
Right.
I've got one that he signed for me. It says, "Bert, thanks for letting me race at DeSoto in the late model when I was only 13.
Yeah.
Still got that buried away somewhere.
And I don't think that was his first race he won. I think his first race, late model race, was at Orlando.
Was it?
Yeah, it was. His first one was at Orlando.
Awesome. They had to promise that they'd let me be the gas catch can guy if he ever gets to a bush race.
Yeah. And now you got, you know what, I've seen him, like, you got Cody Pitts. I'm not sure if Cody's made his debut already in the ASA, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has.
He's another young one that has got, he knows how to get it done.
He does. He does.
I just wish he didn't get sidetracked. I wish he would have went on to a couple bush races. I know he made a Hooters Pro Cup race and done a few things that showed his talent. I think he qualified seventh in his first try at Hooters Pro Cup, and then he overheated. And then the ASA thing, he made that race
Kinley.
Yes.
Kinley, North Carolina.
Kinley, North Carolina, and finished 18th out of 32 cars, I believe. And I think he could have went on right away, and I think he could have got on one of the driver development programs. But
yeah,
he chose in another direction.
It's a family operation, too, you know.
Yeah.
Not one of the unlimited fun teams. It's just a good, you know, heartbeat of America family kind of crew there.
Well, and then the other thing is again, back to the main point of that is that back then he was an uncommon entity. Today he is a common entity, and so today the kids, they know, like Bert said, you said this, Bert, that they know what they need to do to get where they want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, with the media and with making the right moves, and there's a lot more emphasis on it now than there was 10 years ago, and the ASA is like really right on key with this thing.
Yeah, and Ron firmly believes in that. He firmly believes they're, you know, he feels very fortunate that it's gone as well as it has, but let's face it, you had to have the right formula to get it there.
Yeah.
And he hit it. He hit it on the head.
So how do you see from your perspective, how do you see the Challenge Series heating up here? Is right now, we're going to talk to Travis Dassau here in a little bit, and he's got a 50-point lead on the field. How do you see that shaking out? You think it's going to get a lot tighter?
Well, you know the way he's been running. He's won two of the last three, and he had a second. That's pretty darn consistent. You can keep doing it. It's kind of like Mike Skinner in the Truck Series. He's been the only one finishing in the top 10 all year. It's really hard to get ahead of them when they're that consistent. But, as we know, it takes a flat tire, a piece of debris, a motor going away or whatever, and bam, you end up in last place and you drop out of the lead. So
yeah, fate has a major role in racing, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It always does. You can have the best equipment, the best driver, and not win the whole ball game, you know.
Yeah. Well, I hope Eddie Hoffman Jr. wins the whole shebang, because we raced against his dad, Ed Hoffman, back in the 60s. 70s, and I worked with some people named Schuler, Lee Schuler, Tracy Schuler, Larry Schuler. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but
I know the last name. Yeah.
Yeah. Larry Schuler won. He ran three tracks back then: Indiana, Illinois, and Wisconsin, and won 46 features in 1 year. And I can't tell you the year.
Wow.
But
wow.
He won three track championships in three different states, and he drove against Ed Hoffman, and we used to be really jealous of Ed because he used to come in with the two cars, you know, and it was like a rollback trailer. They didn't have enclosed trailers back then, and that's telling my age. But we were jealous of him coming in with two cars and a rollback trailer, and we had a an old open wheel trailer with a tire rack on it. Oh, it was, now that you have the enclosed trailers, you can't imagine having a open trailer.
With all the equipment that they carry now, so you can just about rebuild a whole car if you have a problem.
Exactly.
See, what do you think of that, Bert? Do you think some of the, like Cozzolino or Hoffman, you think some of those guys that have been around, the more veteran drivers, can they keep up with the youth movement?
Yeah, I really do, because, you know, no matter how much money you spend on that car, you can only input so much into it to stay within the rules, and it comes right down to the driver. And that experience, you'll see some of those guys, you see Mark Martin do it all the time. He lays back, and all of a sudden, where'd he come from?
Yeah, Bobby Gill, that's Bobby Gill's M.O. in the Hooters Pro Cup. As a matter of fact, I like to joke with Wayne Morris from the Southern Division, driver of the number 56 car from Lakeland, Florida, Auburndale, Florida.
Yeah, he's in 10th in the points right now with us.
Yeah, I'm joking with him. I'm calling him. He's the Bobby. He does the same thing. I think he has the ability to be kind of like that in this game.
Yeah, but you can interview Wayne.
Well, that's true. And I got to tell you, Bert, you might find this interesting. I don't know if you know about it, but Auburndale had their, you know, the new ownership had their Auburndale Speedway had new ownership, and they had their grand opening this past week. And I was up there. They had about 2,000 people there. They had 800 people in the pits. And Wayne Morris went out, and he won. He led every lap of the sportsman race, didn't have time to get his picture taken, ran and jumped in the late model and led every lap of the 100-lap late model feature there. So I think he's ready and warmed up for New Smyrna.
Did they do extra check on him after that?
Yeah, I don't know, but he had it together. But of course, he's raced at that track. That's where he grew up racing, and now he has his son getting grooved in over there. But he'll be ready for the race.
I pretty much keep track of the Florida racing scene on this website called Karnak.
Oh yeah,
yeah, I'm always on there seeing what's going on, just trying to keep up with it down there, keep up with the friends and everything.
That's funny. Yeah, I spent a little bit of time on there too once in a while.
I would imagine.
But yeah, it's great. You know, one of the coolest things that I have such a good time. I've loved going to the two races. I was bummed out when the fires caused the South Georgia race to not happen, and because I was so looking forward to that. I mean, because you go to the race and you drive, you go a long ways, you know, like when we go up to North Carolina, we're going to go up there and we're going to know 3/4 of the field, or if not more, we'll know them and know them really good,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. That's what I like about the Southern Division. I know so many of them. You know, it's the old home week every race.
Yeah, it's in a whole different setting and a whole different it's a whole different movie theater, you know?
Yeah, they get a little shell-shocked the first time they run through tech.
Shell-shocked, that ain't the word for it. Most of them guys, Bert, are used to tech people kicking the tires. And,
yeah, running over and, the trail, see you next week.
Yeah, exactly.
Anthony Campy had the deer in the headlight look. They had to spend, they had to spend half the afternoon getting their headlight templates, their decals.
Yeah, they had a few good people with them. Bodie Boom for one of them. You know, he'll keep them straight. He knows.
Yeah.
Well, pretty straight.
Are you part of that strict tech, Bert?
Oh yeah, yeah. I do the templates usually, and that's you got to fit. They got to look alike. I mean, we had a guy from with ARP Bodies there. And he picked one out one day. He said, "That's not going to fit at all. That's just so." And he was absolutely right. I mean, it didn't fit anything.
I used to work for ARP for 2.5 years, and ARP was the choice of cheaters for a long time.
Well, we've got their template, you know, the metal one. They don't warp anything like that, so they got to be right.
So,
do you have any tolerance at all?
Very little, like quarter inch. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Now it looks like you have lots of templates. What is exactly, how for guys that are race car drivers that understand all that, what exactly is
well,
the template?
You got a centerline template that fits in between the slots and the air thing on the back, and it goes all the way over the roof, and then you line another one up that goes all the way down the center of the hood. You've got the side-to-side that go over the roof just by the rear window, and you've got the fender templates, and they've just got to fit, period. That's all there is to it, because if it doesn't fit, you've altered it, because comes from ARP, it's going to fit and it's going to be right. So if it doesn't,
right.
What's wrong with this picture here?
And you have different ones for Ford?
Ford, Dodges, Chevrolet, yep. The ones that cross us a little bit right now are the Pontiacs, but we're getting a hold of it.
You don't have any Toyotas, huh?
No Toyotas.
Don't get me started about
that,
okay?
No, that's a different show, Terry.
No, that made the impact I thought they were going to. I mean, as dominant as they are in the truck series, they just can't seem to get a handle on the car part of it.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe there's more competition?
Hard to say, you know. I mean, they do have a couple of good drivers in there, Rudiment.
Right.
I don't know. Hard to tell.
Yeah.
To tell. I understand they tried to buy out some big teams, you know, to help them.
Oh, yeah.
So back to the teching thing there, Bert. You guys do the template deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so you run them through there. That all happens before they go do qualifying?
There's a voluntary tech before you get out for practice. Obviously, you have to go through safety tech if you haven't done that before. And then you have the voluntary tech with the templates, referee scales, and all that. And then they'll seal engines also. They'll check your engine and seal it if it hasn't been. And then before qualifying, it's mandatory. And we take them in qualifying order. We also release their impounded tires that they've picked out earlier. They get them released as they come to tech to put their four tires on, inflate them to the proper pressure, then go through the tech. And it's got to be right. Period.
Yeah.
And then we impound the cars at that point till race time, so they can't do anything but remove tape and let some air out of the tires.
So after qualifying, they can't touch the cars?
Correct. They're impounded.
Well, back to earlier in the day, do they have to go through a safety inspection every race or just the first time?
We keep a pretty good list of it, and, you know, if it's a minor thing that they just can't get it fixed but it's not quite right, we'll, you know, if it's not a real safety issue, we'll let them ride on it, and then we go back and we recheck to make sure they've got it fixed by the next race.
What's the emphasis on the safety checking?
The belts, the helmet, fire system, the way the seat's fastened on there. We've got a very specific way to do that. That threw David Pollin. The first race he showed up at Bronson, he'd loaded up and was ready to go, and Mike Cope said, pull in our shop, we'll make it right. There's some things that, no, you're not going to race with that, period. It's not safe. We're not going to allow it. Safety is always the utmost concern.
Do you have you seen any of those Butler, I don't know if it's just Butler, but I think it's Butler-built seats that have the piano wire kind of contraption built into them so that they rip the foam away automatically or very quickly. Have you seen those?
No, I've never had that called to my attention. I haven't seen one of those.
Yeah, we had the guy who created that on one of our other shows a few weeks ago. It was pretty fascinating. He brought one in with it and demonstrated it. You know, because like there's so much, there's hardly any room there in the way the seats and the car, those cars are any of the late right. model type stuff. You know, the guy has no headroom to move, right? And so in order for the guy to be able, the safety teams in an emergency to be able to get a driver to get in there to be able to move him around or get him out, they actually have these saws. I forget the name of it. I'll have to dig it out here. I got it in a pile of papers. And you just pull on this ring, and it doesn't hurt the seat. It just pulls away all that foam that's built into the seat.
And that's some room.
Yeah, and now they got about 6 or 8 inches or whatever. You know what I mean? They got movement room that they can do. It's pretty fascinating. They come with some of the Butler built seats as an excellent little safety device. Guy down here in Northport, Florida, created that, and they've had them in the seats for a few years now.
Yeah, that's a pretty good idea, really, because it is tight in there. I mean, I don't know how people like Wayne Morris get in them, quite frankly.
Well, I'm not going to go too far with that, but I did notice that it was a little different. It caught my attention, him getting out of the car the other night. You know, so.
He's a big man.
Yeah.
Big guy.
Yeah.
Well, Michael Waltrip's a big man, too, but too bad he not only made one or two races now.
You wonder, is it the car or has the driver come to the end, you know?
I have a show coming up, Bert. I'm going to have you on called NASCAR Fast Talk. We're going to get into a few of those subjects.
And I like the heck out of Michael. You know,
absolutely.
On several occasions, and he's more fun than a barrel of monkeys. But, and he is tall. He's 6'5".
Yeah.
That's a big guy.
You know, and David Ruderman is such a good guy. That whole deal is, you know, I mean, anybody that knows that man knows that
he's good people.
He's as good as it gets, no doubt. And you can't help but wish him the best in that whole thing, and hopefully it'll turn around and be good for him. But
they'll get a handle on it ultimately.
Yeah.
I don't doubt it.
So
I just hope they don't lose their sponsors first.
Yeah. So, you know, coming up here in August, Bert, I know you got some things you got to get to here today, but coming up in August, the ASA Late Model Series, I think it's August 4th, comes up to your neck of the woods.
Bristol. Yeah, we're going to be the guinea pigs, basically. First series to race on the new surface there, Bristol.
You'll be the first to race on it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll definitely be there.
Yeah, we're going to send Terry.
The problem they had with the drag strip, it didn't get ready in time. They had to cancel the big NHRA shindig they had going there.
Yeah.
So I hopefully they'll get it done. The weather's been so dry up here, they can't use that as an excuse. It should work.
Yeah, right. That should be a wild, wild weekend.
By the way, Jack, we're moving into that bigger house this weekend, so the invitation's open. We got room for you.
All right.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
You're going to have plenty of food?
No, he's not supplying the food.
Take my motorhome and stay at the track.
There you go. So what's your next venue for the ASA Late Models?
Yeah, obviously New Smyrna.
Oh, okay, that'll be your next one.
Yeah, we'll be doing that one. Gosh, it's just there's so many different ones. You know, I hardly even look at the schedule anymore until about a week before it's time to go to figure out where I got to be.
Gotcha. And, you know New Smyrna Speedway. You know it really good. It's been repaved. It's one fast half-mile racetrack. And New Smyrna is a very cool place. I mean, it's the home of the Florida Governor's Cup, which is, maybe not as big these days as the Snowball Derby, but in over the long haul, it's been a very significant race, especially for, obviously, for Floridians. But they also have the 10 straight days of during Speed Week. So
I was there this past winter.
Yeah, the World Series of Asphalt Stock Car Racing is one of the premier kind of events like that during the Winter Nationals and Speed Weeks down here in Florida, and which has really gotten a lot bigger, hasn't it, with the PRI coming to Orlando every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, stirred up the interest.
Changed the thing. But New Smyrna Speedway, what do you look for there? What kind of race do you think we'll see?
Well, obviously it's going to be fast because it's a bigger track than we're used to. I look for it to be, as always, it's going to be competitive, but I don't think we're going to have the bang them up like we do on the short tracks. I think they're going to be a little more aware of their surroundings and their circumstances and realize that, one of the things Don Nerone will tell you, I remember when we went there with Fast Truck, he says, guys, this track will hurt you. Will hurt you. You can't be fooling around out there. It's too big for that.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll give that same speech to the ASA boys, too.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because that's exactly right.
I really think with Carnac's help that we could really make the ASA race as big as any other race in Florida.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, we're gonna Real Racing USA, Bill Green, myself, Rick Angie's teaming up with Matt Pereira, and we're going to broadcast that race live over the Internet.
You guys won't have to talk much.
Well, no, we're not. As a matter of fact, Rick and I are actually going to – we're actually going to be down in the pits doing interviews during and after the race and whatnot, and Bill Green's going to provide color.
You won't be able to talk much. We appreciate that. Matt, take that over. Actually, they drew 11,700 people for the race they had out at Rusty Wallace's track in Iowa. ASA.
No way. 11,000?
Almost 12,000 people for that race.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I'm really looking forward to it, Bert, and really appreciate you spending the time with us, and I look forward to seeing you at New Smyrna Speedway on June 23rd, man.
Yep, I'm looking forward to it. Get back to Florida, visit some family while I'm down there.
Yeah, well, and people up north need to know, man, you come to New Smyrna at this time of year, you better bring some sunscreen, and I'll tell you, the last week or so, it has been brutal.
Plenty of water.
Plenty of water.
There you go. All right, Bert. Thanks, man.
Thank you, Jack. I enjoy it.
See ya.
Good talking to you, Bert.
You guys, about 10 days.
All right, Terry.
Take care.
Terry, so that's
later now. Bye.
Terry, that's one of the most professional. Early on when I got involved in the media part of this whole deal, 10, 11 years ago. Bert was one of the guys, along with Pete Orr, but the other guy that really stood out to me as being a really professional and always presenting, because, you know, it's a little rough on the edges sometimes at the local short tracks. And
right.
Bert was always the guy who gave the professional image to the sport in Florida, as far as I was concerned.
Yep, and, you know, there are some competitors that at the time didn't like Bert. But you know why? It's because of his professionalism.
Yeah.
And his particular to detail, like ASA teching now.
That's right.
And that's why. I mean, people that run DeSoto wanted to run what they brung, you know.
Yeah.
And Bert wouldn't allow it.
Yeah.
He was great to B.J. McLeod and me and his parents.
And, and
letting him run when he was 13 years old.
And then after that, when he was working with the Fast Truck Racing Series, which, by the way, is probably as instrumental, more instrumental, I would say, than any other racing series or racetrack or any other organization at all.
Right.
In having that big field of young Florida guys in the ASA, because when you go through the list, I mean, some of them came through Fast Cars series deal, like their truck deal, and some of them came from the Auburndale Kids Club.
Right.
But the vast majority of those kids came up and learned how to race and learned, you know, a pretty professional approach to it by Bobby Deal, as the way he run the fast trucks.
Isn't that the series that Matt Martin ran, Mark Martin's son?
He ran some in that, and he also ran some in the more in the Fast Car Pro Truck, their deal, the Fast Car Truck Series deal. But he also did run. Yes, he did run the other series, the Fast Truck Series.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's pretty interesting. And I tell you what, it's time for a break, and we're going to come back with Travis Dassel, the current points leader of the ASA Challenge.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction Race Team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
CarNac.com, your online racing community since 1997. CarNac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than CarNac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, CarNac gets it done.
It's come down to this. 100 laps, 5 to go at the line. 5 cars, nose to tail, heading down into turn number 1. It's anybody's race.
Inside Florida Racing.
It's definitely crunch time. Somebody's going to have to make a move. 3 laps to go as they cross the start-finish line. Going down into turn number 1, they start to fan out. Coming off a 2, they're side-by-side down the back straightaway.
Inside Florida Racing.
That's it. Coming off a turn 4, white flag in the air. Checkers and wreckers, anybody's race as they go down to turn number 1. They fan out. 2x2, 3 wide. Coming off the turn number 2, they get sideways down the back straightaway. Someone breaks loose to the top, trying to make the run up on the high side. Going to do it the hard way around. Coming around 4, there's still 2x2. 3 cars drop back. It's 1 car coming out sideways. Who's on the inside? Coming to the line. It's anybody's race.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing. Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing, Thursday, 7 to 9. There is no show like only on Real Racing USA. Back here at the weekly Wednesday affair called the ASA Fast Lane, Terry Wall, myself, Jack Smith. Terry,
yep.
As we were talking earlier when we were interviewing Bert Thomas, we were talking about the Northern division and the challenge division a bit. And we couldn't wait to talk to our next guest, Travis Dassau, who is leading the challenge division by 50-some points. Welcome to the ASA Fast Lane, Travis.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, and just correct me so that I don't have to stumble over it. How do you? What is the appropriate pronunciation of your last name?
Dassau.
Dassau.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a W on the end, but it, don't make any sound with it. So.
Okay. So, and you're from Wisconsin?
Yep.
All right. Well, welcome to the show, man. And you've been tearing them up here of late.
Yeah, we're starting to click a little bit here. We had a couple rough runs in the beginning of the year. Not so much that the cars were bad or, like, ill handling, but we just had some bad luck in the first two ones. We had cars that were definitely top three cars in the first two and had a little bad luck. But the last three have definitely turned around for us with two wins and second place at Newton. So.
Yeah. Now, yesterday we asked Matt Prier about your success, and he said you guys had went and bought a race team up there, lock, stock, and barrel. Is that kind of like what happened?
Yeah, pretty much. We bought out Waltham Racing, us and a couple investors, to take over Waltham Racing, which won the last two ASA Challenge Series championships with Stephen Leicht and Kelly Byers. And the shop's only 25 minutes from where our old shop was. And the team pretty much stayed all intact. All the cars stayed here. And pretty much the team went on as just as usual, only with a different name.
Well, that's a pretty impressive couple of people that came out of that shop, Stephen Leicht and Kelly Byers. Kelly Byers ran his first Busch race this weekend, I believe.
Yeah, I heard. I didn't get to really watch race too much, but I know he had a pretty good run. I think he ended up 16th in that race, and I know Stephen was leading the thing for a while until he blew up his motor.
Right.
So that was definitely a good race for both of them.
Right. And now you run a Slinger, Travis?
Yeah. We raced the last 3 years we actually raced there as much as we could, you know, almost full time. And this year we're kind of backing off a little bit. We're running about a handful of times. But
well, there's some famous people come out of Slinger, Dick Trico and Tom Reffner, and I believe all the Sauter boys came out of Slinger. Rusty Wallace is one there. Mark Martin's one there. So you're following in some pretty big footsteps there.
Yeah, that's definitely a place that there's been a lot of good racers that have gone through there, and it's lucky enough for me. It's only 10 minutes from my house. So.
Well, obviously, you must be one of them, Travis, and you're in that group now, you know what I mean? And that's a pretty cool thing. So tell us a little bit about your racing, how you got started, and, you know, leading up to the ASA deal.
Well, actually, I started racing when I was 5 years old. I actually started racing snowmobiles, which is kind of appropriate for living up here in Wisconsin. We raced snowmobiles from when I was 5 years old until I was 13. Over that period, I won 5 world championships and 10 points championships throughout the years. I mean, I think we ran like 5 different classes throughout that whole time. And then I raced go-karts from when I was 8 years old until I was 14. During the time I was running snowmobiles, we really didn't take go-karting that seriously. That was just kind of our summer hobby. We took the snowmobile stuff a lot more serious. And when we were done snowmobile racing, I raced 2 seasons of go-karts full-time. And both those times, I won track championships at our local track. So then we moved on. When I was 15 years old, we ran super late model at Wisconsin Dells Motor Speedway, where I won the Rookie of the Year. And then for the next 2 years, we ran full-time Slinger. Well, actually, 3 years we raced full-time at Slinger. We raced another full year at the Dells. And then we made 5 ASA National Tour starts for Chad Wood and Wood Brothers Racing. And then 2005 was our first season full-time in ASA late model series, where we ended up 9th in the points. And then 2006, we ended up 7th in the points. We had 3 track records and 6 fast times over that time. And this year, here we are.
So you're a 15-year veteran.
Yeah.
At 20 years old.
At 20 years old. That's pretty cool, Travis. So what led up to the decision to go buy this team?
It actually came came upon us really, really quick. I mean, we were set to run, you know, the Challenger Series again with our own team. When we got to the banquet in January, I believe it was, they announced that Waltham Racing was going to be shutting down, and they were looking for a new owner and everything, and my dad started talking to him a little bit, and it was still a far-fetched deal to get done, and everything came together with a couple investors that my dad got in contact with and himself, and put the deal together. And I mean, it happened within 2 weeks, and then once we got the deal done, we were going racing again in 4 weeks, so we didn't have too much time to turn around. And I had to get used to the new crew, and having Howie Lotto as the crew chief, and there's a lot of learning and getting to know each other in 4 weeks, but it put us a little bit behind, but I don't think it hurt us too bad.
All right, we're talking with Travis Dasso, the driver of the number 89 Chevy in the ASA Late Model Challenge Division. Do you race any of the Northern Division's races as well?
I think we have 4 races on our schedule this year we're going to run in that series. We ran one so far. We ran Indianapolis Raceway Park. We ended up 5th in that. So.
Yeah.
That's a fun track.
Yeah, I love that.
So, when you guys were making your... When did you start in the ASA?
In the late model series in 05, we ran the national tour back in the end of 03 and beginning of 04.
So that was in the old deal?
Yep.
I got you. So you had actually started in the ASA before the meltdown and Sanity came to the plate with Ron Varney and his wife and putting all this together.
Yeah, I was there for the whole meltdown time period. So
did you come to Lakeland, Florida, to race in that last couple of years there?
Yep, yeah, in 04 we were down there. We had a really good run going there. I think we were running up in the top 3 for a while there, and we actually got taken out by a lap car.
Yeah, that was a strange thing. That was the first time any of us had seen, like, the car numbers were in the back quarter panels. None of us reporter guys who were down there trying to keep track of all this, writing race reports and stuff, you know, and we couldn't tell who was who. It was, like, insane. And then the...
Come on, Jack, there was more room for sponsors.
and then the other thing that was, like, really weird was the way you... I forget the circumstances. I know you remember is the starting, the way you would restart on you could pick your lane or something?
Yeah, it was double file restarts, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even remember anymore how it all went. I think it was where you could pick your spot where you wanted to, if you wanted to line up on the inside or outside.
Yeah, you could pick your lane on the restarts, double file restarts, which was kind of, I mean, if you were a fan who really liked to see Rex, it was right up your alley.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's like you run every 5 laps, and there would be another caution because all them double file restarts.
Yeah, that was wild. But see, you've been through a bit there. That's cool. So, when Ron Varney put this deal together and you know started the ASA series anew, why the ASA as opposed to say the Hooters Pro Cup or something of that nature?
I think mainly why we did the ASA Late Model Series in comparison to the Hooters Pro Cup or like Busch East or something like that was pretty much because the ASA stuff, one, was more, you know, more based out of the Midwest area where we're from. So there'd be a lot of traveling. We've heard the Hooters Pro Cup stuff is mostly in the eastern part of the country. And then along with the cost, too. I mean, the ASA Late Model Series with their crate motor program definitely cuts a lot of the costs out of the traveling and racing. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, now, we were talking to Bert Thomas earlier about that, and now you can buy 4 or 5 motors for the cost of a super late model motor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
when you blow one up, you're not out that 40, 50 grand like you were when you race super lates or even in the Pro Cup series.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this last race, I mean, you just stuck it to them. I mean, you led every lap. I mean, granted, there was a lot of caution laps, but you led the whole thing, man. I mean, that must have been... Were you ever worried?
Well, first of all, I was worried in qualifying because I think we were the 3rd car to go out, and the track was still pretty slippery and stuff, and we qualified worse than what we thought we were going to. I think we ended up 10th, and luckily enough, we got the draw of 10, so we got to start on the pole. So that took a lot of pressure off right there. And then started getting worried towards the end of that second half of the race when Robbie Pyle moved into 2nd, and I knew he was going to be all weekend. I knew he was going to be the one to beat, and it was just pretty much, Howie was preaching in my ear, be patient, be patient. Don't overdrive that race car and you'll have them. And that's what we did, and we went away with the win. It was just kind of hard because we had a really good car in the long run. And I think the longest green flag run we had that whole race was 9 laps or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, just get going, and then the caution will come out again. So you just start opening up a lead, and then have to start all over again.
How do you feel, Travis, about the younger drivers? Have you ever been contacted by one of the training programs from a NASCAR team? And when you're racing in the ASA, they allow 14-year-old drivers. Do you have a problem with that at all? Because you were 14 when you run.
You know, personally, I have been contacted by a couple. I mean, it's definitely a good breeding ground for Cup teams to be looking at you and stuff like that. And in my opinion on the 14-year-olds, I mean, it's a case-by-case scenario, I got to say. I mean, some of them drivers, 14 years old, I mean, they're just as good as a guy at 30 or 35 years old.
Right.
But you get some of these guys that, you know, they're pushing, the parents or whoever is pushing them in way too fast. And
right, right.
Then they become a hazard, and then they just make themselves look bad, and you don't want to do that either.
And you don't want to get somebody else hurt.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when we're going to these high-speed racetracks like we were at Newton, Iowa, and when we put a box mile later on in the year.
Yeah, that's
right. And, well, Bristol, too.
Yeah, I forgot all about that. Bristol's probably the fastest place to go through, even though it's only a half mile.
Right.
Yeah, so have you, I mean, you seem pretty, I mean, I haven't met you, but you seem pretty mature for your age in terms of, I mean, you know, you handle yourself obviously very well with the media. How did that come about for you? I mean, is it something did you get, like, there's a lot of, not NASCAR development teams, but there's a lot of these, quote, development teams that, like, train people to talk to the media and that sort of thing. Have you done some of that, or is this something you just
really,
picked up on?
With the whole, you know, media part of it, I have not had any training with it. It's pretty much, I think a lot of it's helped. You know, when I first started racing, I hated that part of it. You know, talking to people, just because, you know, I was one of those kids in school that kind of sat in the back corner and didn't want to talk much.
Yeah, you were thinking about racing a car. I know.
Yeah. But I think it just helps, you know, being in it. I think this is our fifth year already in late model racing, and it just, I mean, just experience, I think, with talking with different people and stuff, and how people call me. Now people say I just don't, you know, I don't stop talking, so.
Yeah, practice in the winner's circle, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I'm getting some of that practice this year. So.
Yeah. So what do you see coming up at it's Berlin?
Yep, Berlin is our next. We run there this weekend. You know, I kind of, last year was the first time I ever seen the place, and we kind of struggled a little bit, but I think it was just because it's such a different racetrack, and being there the first time, and we didn't have a whole lot of practice. It was just kind of a bad, you know, showing for us. And I know coming back to this year, I got a different mindset. I kind of know what to expect, and we got a, you know, hopefully a better car when we go back this year. So,
describe that track to Jack, Travis. I don't think he's ever been there or seen it. I've seen it on television. It's a different animal.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it's the place you really got to finesse, and if you overdrive the place, it's going to eat you up.
What is it, a half mile?
Yeah, it's a half mile. It's almost a complete circle for the most part, and
yeah,
no grip, tears up tires. I know almost every lap you lose a tenth of a second just because of the tires going away.
Yeah, it's a like a circle. There's really no straightaway. You need to tell Johnny Benson to repave that. He can afford it.
Yeah, I think he needs to put a back wall or a backstretch wall on it that went off last year and ended up flipping the car. So,
it's one of those like Watermelon Capital. It doesn't have a back wall, huh?
No back wall, and it's got a big tire going into three, a couple big tires where the wall starts again. That's where he hit last year. So,
yeah. So, you know, like what kind of race do you expect there then? Obviously with the back wall, that'll keep some of the debris off, so you may not have as many cautions, but you know, what do you see there?
I mean, I think there's gonna be a lot of lap traffic to start out with. I mean, that's gonna maybe play a little bit of a trouble with the whole deal. I mean, guys are gonna use up their tires really fast to try overdriving it with new tires. The guys that are patient throughout the whole race are gonna, you know, end up being up front towards the end of the race, and it'll be a tough race to get through with 100 laps and that. I mean, you're gonna have no tires left at the end of the race, and it's gonna start getting slippery out there with the tires going away and everything. And
do you think possibly, Travis, that somebody might put on tires?
I know we can put on, as of right now, they're going to let you put on two tires at the halfway break.
Right.
I know some people, once we get there, are going to try to lobby to put four on at the 100-lap break just because of the tire wear.
Do you guys have a halfway break in all of the Challenge Division races?
Yep.
That makes a big difference. Like in the ASA South and North, the races are 125 or 100 laps, and you don't necessarily have a pit stop unless you have a flat tire or something. But so you guys have a mandatory halfway pit stop.
Yeah, we actually have a 10-minute break, which I really like because, if the car isn't perfect, you get to come in, make an adjustment. But it really brings out the good teams because they know, when you come in at that halfway break, you know what kind of adjustments you got to make. And it's all about who makes the better adjustments after halfway.
Yeah. Well, it's a two-edged sword, double-edged sword there because for a fan's perspective, I know I've seen those. I haven't seen the Challenge Series race, but similar races to that. For the fans' perspective, the pit stops and the guys coming in and having to slam them on and get out to get back out there is like, that's all part of the fan appeal. But it's certainly got to help keep the cost down because you don't have to have the high-dollar pit crews and have to fight for, people can spend more money on better pit crews and get better advantages. So it probably is better in the long run for the drivers.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I personally, I don't like the halfway pit stop, only because, Travis, the good teams are going to, the cream of the crop is going to come to the top anyway. And it takes more strategy to go a straight 100 miles than just 50 miles or 50 laps. And I'm old school, Travis, sorry. I just think it takes away from the good strategies. You stop at 50 laps and you get a 10-minute break, it changes everything. And,
but Terry, it's really is true. Like in the Hooters Pro Cup, for instance, they the pit crews, some of the better teams, they bring in guys from Mooresville and places like that to work on the weekends at those Hooters Pro Cup races, and because they can afford to, and it certainly gives them a competitive advantage. Many of those races are actually won in the pits and lost in the pit. So, this is a real, it's all part, it makes sense as far as the ASA's deal because this is all about making it affordable for the drivers. Guys don't have to,
And equal.
And keeping them closely equal, right. Which is probably a good thing.
Well, you can teach old dog new tricks sometimes.
There you go.
the big thing that helps too is, with those 100 lap races, when you don't get the pit, the cars are impounded after qualifying. So a big thing is, too, if you didn't put on tires all day and you go to bolt on new ones for qualifying and something, goes, the car's completely different in qualifying, you're stuck with it for 100 laps.
Mm-hmm.
At least with these 200-lap races, you get to stop at 100 to make those adjustments that you need, as the track changed and everything else to go for the last 100.
And that exact thing happened to a few of the guys, or at least they said it, that's what happened up at the first ASA South race, maybe it was the other one, but one of those races, I remember there was a couple of guys who said that exact thing, that the tires just weren't the same, and they were stuck with them, like you said, for the race. What do you do when you're not racing or in that race shop where you are right now working on your car?
Well, I know a lot of the time is spent in the shop. I'm here every day working full time. Otherwise than that, try to hang out with friends, try to relax as much as I can, just try to get away from racing. Actually, I can't say that either. I like going to the racetrack when I'm off too. I help a guy on dirt in a sprint car, which is always fun, something a little different.
Yeah, where's that at?
That's actually up around the Midwest, the IRA Sprint Car Series.
Uh-huh.
Same thing as World of Outlaws, only, Midwestern base more.
Sure. They race on dirt.
Yep.
And wing sprints?
Yep.
Isn't that cool?
Winged 410 sprints, so that's pretty cool. It's something different to, just see different kinds of racing, and that's definitely a different kind of racing than asphalt late model racing.
Got that right. Have you ever had the urge to climb into one of those bad machines?
I actually have. I'm actually related to a guy that also runs a 410 sprint, and that's something I've gone and watched him since I've been, 10, 11 years old, and that's something I always wanted to do, and I hope one day I at least get a shot to at least try it once. I don't want to, go out there and try to set the world on fire. I just like to try to drive one once.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome, man. Those guys, like, they're making this is the most fascinating thing to me. They're going down, and they're racing, all kinds of things going on, and they're making adjustments inside the car.
Yeah,
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, when I went with them this past weekend, and I asked him that. I said, after the feature, I said, how do you have time to do that sort of stuff? I mean, he's got, you know, two shock adjusters in it and a wing adjustment and all this other stuff. You know, in an asphalt car, you got more time down the straightaways and all you got is the brake bias adjuster. And I said, how do you do it? He says, you just kind of get used to it after a while. And I'm like, I don't know how I could do that.
Yeah, they do. And, down in Florida, they have the TBARA, Tampa Bay Area Racing Association wing sprints, and they race on asphalt. And they race like 25 races a year. And these guys, they're screaming. And they're making all these changes and adjustments. And they're so fast. Sometimes I think they can do a full feature if they don't have cautions. They do a full feature in like 7 minutes or 6 minutes or something. It's over, you know. But, that's pretty cool. And then so when you're in the shop working, you're working on your ASA deal, or you got other cars you're working on too?
We actually got four ASA cars between the two we bring along to every challenge race. We got a North car, and then we got a Speedway car that we use for Newton and for Milwaukee. And then we also got a super late model that we run at Slinger. So kind of between that. And
may I ask what chassis you run it?
All our ASA cars are Howe chassis.
Howe? Okay.
Yeah. That's cool.
Close with Chaz and Dick up there, and they're great people to work with, and couldn't ask for better chassis to work with either.
Yeah. So who sponsors that number 89 Chevrolet?
Our main sponsor this year is the Chicago Regional Council of Carpenters, along with a lot of other associate sponsors from around our area. We just started working on this deal with Race Against Drugs, where I'm a spokesperson for that. So that's kind of a neat deal. It's still in its early stages, but it seems like it's going to be a pretty neat.
Tell us about that.
What it is actually, just trying to teach kids about, trying to stay clean and, stay away from drugs and everything. And just trying to, as well as anybody else does, I mean, when a race car driver and a race car shows up at, like, a school or some kind of function, I mean, kids seem to listen to what they have to say and stuff. So I think that's really going to be a good partnership there.
Yeah.
I think NASCAR and the preceding series has the best drug policy in sports.
That's very cool.
And there's been a couple guys that's got the band, so they're not fooling around, and they're serious about their drug policy.
That's cool. Now, you have a brother that races, is that right?
Yeah, I got a 14-year-old brother now. Last year when he was 13 years old, he made his first ASA Challenge Series start, which I think made him the youngest driver to ever start an ASA race.
Don't even go there, Terry. Just leave it alone.
Yeah, and this year he's going to try to, we're going to get him into some more races towards the end of the year here. We've just been so busy trying to get everything up and going with this new team. But we're going to get him some testing in and try to make a couple maybe North starts and some local racetrack races around here this year.
So yeah, that's cool.
How old was he?
He was 13 then. He's 14 now. So.
Yeah, see, I told you, Terry, don't go there.
Yeah, and I mean, we're just trying to ease him into it. We don't want to, throw too much at him right away.
Right.
I think that's the way you got to do it. That's the way I did it. Just kind of ease into it and you learn as you go. And you got to learn what you're doing before you go fast at doing it. So.
Is he like working on the cars?
Oh, yeah, he loves doing it.
Well, that's a great thing. And one thing that bugs me about it really is, I don't have a problem with the young. I mean, I love to see the young kids racing because, the reaction times and all like that. I mean, especially the kids that have learned. Have you played video games, racing video games at all?
Yeah, growing up, that was one of my favorite things to do. I mean, I haven't done a whole lot of it, but that was definitely something I love doing. I actually think that does help you a lot when you're worth reaction time and stuff like that.
No, absolutely. And you can learn a track that you haven't been to. You can get some actual sort of, quote, seat time on that track before you've ever been there and get a feeling for it on some of the better games, too.
Yeah, Denny Hamlin's a perfect example of that last year at Pocono.
Yeah, that's wild. I mean, that's cool, man. And looking forward to keeping track of what's going on with your deal, man. And we wish you the best of luck. Thanks for spending the time with us today on the ASA Fastlane. And, man, you guys got it going on.
Thanks a lot for having me. Hopefully we can keep it up the rest of the year and get that championship.
Right. Yeah, we'll have a party at your garage after you win the championship.
All right, sounds good.
All right. Travis Dasso.
Good to you, Travis.
Yeah, thanks.
Oh, very cool, man. Travis Dasso. from Wisconsin. That young man isn't just another example, Terry. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. He's only 20 years old, and I think the oldest driver that we've interviewed, except for old man Morris, was 26 years old.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating, and they're so well-spoken, and they handle themselves well on the track, and
like Bert said in the earlier interview, that they know they have to mind their P's and Q's if they're going to go any farther than ASA.
Yeah, well, they have to mind their P's and Q's just to get through tech.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that. I can't wait. But that's going to be an experience of its own.
Yeah, but, this weekend coming up, the Berlin Raceway. It's Raceway, right? That's the...
Right.
Yeah. That's the ASA 200 lap challenge race, division race coming up this weekend. And then on June 23rd, the ASA late model series, the South Division, gets it going again at New Smyrna Speedway. Mm-hmm. Boy, I'll just tell you, they're absolutely, what Bert had said about that is absolutely on the money, because that's not a place where you want to go fool around, because it can hurt you. It is one fast, oh my goodness, it is one. As a matter of fact, I've had several drivers. I remember talking to this one guy who was in a Hooters Pro Cup racer, and he said the first time he used to sit up in the grandstands over in the pits section there and turn – watch the cars coming at you into turn three there and coming through four. And he couldn't believe it that he actually did that, because when you're out there, he says, you're just riding into the wall and the gravity pulls you around. I mean, there's winds that come off of, there's a buffeting that comes off of the turn four. I guess because of the signs, the billboards or something, because you get speeds going up and down that back straight. It's fast, man.
Yeah, I can't wait to get down there and see the new pavement.
Yeah, so...
All right.
That's pretty cool, man. ASA Fast Lane. Terry, it's a pleasure working with you, as always, man. I mean, your knowledge, especially of the northern area, always amazes me. You know a lot about the history of racing, and... You know a lot of these guys' fathers and grandfathers, because when you've been involved in this since you were very young, and especially that Midwest stuff and that northern racing, and that's pretty. Yeah. It makes it a treat.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, and I can't wait till next week.
All right, this is Jack Smith and Terry Wall. We will see you next week on the ASA Fast Lane Wednesdays.